Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Librarian is In, the New York Public Library's podcast about books, culture, and what to read next. I'm Gwen.
I'm Frank.
And just as a reminder, we're in our brave new world where we come out every week. And every other show is a conversation slash interview with awesome people from the world of books that we think are especially cool. So it's actually fitting that we're starting with two people who I think are extremely awesome, Bayana and Robin from Black Girls Create, which is a website that's a hub for Black nerds and creators. Their work and the work of other people that they foster is super cool, and I'm really excited to have you guys on the show via Skype. So thanks so much for coming.
Thank you for having us. I'm a huge, like, can you be a library groupie?
I'm a librarian. Please. Groupie. I'll take any groupie I can get. Is that Robin?
It's Robin, yeah. I'm NYPL gift store. And when I went to see Hamilton, I walked in to visit her and then quickly just like left her and was like, there's a library. I got to go. It's the library. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Did you see the Hamilton exhibit?
I did. I was like, oh, it's perfect.
Oh, that's awesome.
So now we're in New York, obviously. You guys are, where are you two? You're in different states, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I'm in Chicago and Robin is in Oakland.
Right.
Yeah.
But I know you both met in Oakland, right?
Where you cousins. Both grew up. We met in birth. Well,
all right. Tell us the story about how you came to be this super duper duo.
Yeah, Bayana's been stuck with me since she was born. She didn't have a choice, really.
Oh, I'm sure I didn't know that. But
how did you decide to create a website together?
Well, it was. There are like different steps to it. So Robin moved, I'm originally from Oakland, California, and Robin's from, she was living in San Diego at the time. She's from Anaheim. She had just recently moved up to the Bay Area. And I was in college at the time, and I feel like it was kind of random. I just like texted her and was like, so I want to start a blog. Do you want to do it with me? Cause I didn't want to do it by myself. So we did like we did this other site, and it was called The Life and Times of a Black Girl Nerd, and we did it for a summer. And I think we wrote my sister into doing it too. Yeah. And it was like, it was fine until school started again, and I had no time to work on it. So then that kind of just like disappeared. And then after I graduated, the next year, we decided to kind of like reboot and like really take it seriously and be more like intentional about the content we produced and like when we produced it and that kind of thing, so that we didn't like burn out like we did the first time.
Mm-hmm. We were trying to do like daily posts and I was working full-time, she was in school full-time. It just was like not gonna work.
Yeah, you know?
No. Yeah.
And then I had always like I guess like our Potterhead journey is a little bit separate from that, but Potter has always been something that's really brought us together since we first, I don't know if your listeners know, but California is a very big state. So just because we both grew up in California doesn't mean we literally grew up on like, basically if I lived in Florida and she lived in Michigan. So we didn't see each other.
It's a big difference.
Yeah, it's like an 8-hour drive to get from where I lived to where she lived. And we would see each other like holidays and like family time, but that doesn't really give you a lot of time to like really nerd out together. And so I think she was in high school and this just came down for a week, like a spring break. And it was like, I don't know what to do with this like high schooler. Like I'm not even like, I'm barely cool. Like I'm not even cool. I wasn't even cool. But I was like 21 and I'm like 8 years older than her. And so I was what am I supposed to do? Like she's really cool and I'm lame. And so she had like was in the middle of a Harry Potter reread and I was like, oh, okay, we can talk. And we ended up like, I think, what did we do, Bayana? We like read a book and then watched a movie and then got to that next book and watched a movie and we went through most of them.
And then you had like Harry Potter seen it or something.
So yeah, I had Harry Potter games. Yeah.
Oh my God, what a way to spend a week. That's amazing.
Right, and my mom got mad and, like, kicked us out of the house for a while, so then we, like, wandered around. We went to Target to buy, like, the next Harry Potter movie that had just came out and, like, talk about Harry Potter outside to make my mom happy and then go back inside.
Like, are you okay with me reading this book out in the outdoors? Okay, fine. I will do that.
That is basically my childhood. I'm like, can I take a book with me? No, go talk to people.
So were you reading the whole Harry Potter series as each book came out originally? Like, as children?
I was 13, I believe, 12 or 13 when the first book came out. And it was just something that I did alone because I didn't have anyone that was into it the way that I was into it. And I also, like, didn't have, like, a lot of friends that I would talk to. I was very, like, quiet. And then Bayana, because she's so young.
Yeah. I was, like, 6 when I read the first book.
Wow.
And they'd been out.
Like, the first book I had to wait for was Order of the Phoenix. And I would actually, like, I had Sorcerer's Stone, and then I actually borrowed my grandmother's, like, Chamber of Secrets through Goblet of Fire. And so I was also reading it, like, as the movies were coming out too. And so I have this thing, which I still have, where I'm like, I have to read the books first. And so I, like, finished Sorcerer's Stone, the book, right before the movie came out. Like, I think it was maybe like the day before I was going to go see it.
And she was 6.
And I was I think I might've been like 7 at that. That's not much difference, but then I finally had to wait, like, once I finished Goblet of Fire, and I'm sure, I mean, I reread those 4 books before Order of Phoenix came out.
That's amazing. We often get the question, how old should my child be before I introduce Harry Potter? So now I can say someone we know read it when they were 6, which is earlier than the age I usually do.
But she had to wait. That's the thing that I always tell people is, like, now that they're all out, that jump between, I would say, between Prisoner and Goblet, you need that time. And then especially between Goblet of Fire and Order of the Phoenix, like, you can probably be 9 and read Goblet of Fire.
Yeah, which I think is what I was.
But I don't think that you could be 10 or 11 and read Order of the Phoenix.
No, that's scary.
Yeah,
and, like, we're trying to figure it out too, because I have a little sister now who's like 4, and so we've been kind of, like, slowly introducing Harry Potter, like, just kind of the world for her, and you know we have illustrated editions, so, like, showing her the pictures, and, like, she can read, so I'm just like, hey, read this one page of Harry Potter, but, like, I'm thinking maybe when she turns 6 or 7 is when I'm gonna buy her the first book, and then I'll probably, you know, we'll, like, space it out.
Wow, this whole Harry Potter thing is, like, I have very little to say, but this is, I've only read the first one, and I was sort of, like, already into middle age by the time I read that, so I'm a lot older than all 3 of you.
I just had my aunt who is in her, I think she was in her 60s when I made her read the books for the first time.
You made
her. She's a teacher, but she still, like, ran through them, so I think there is no age, and that's one of the things that, like, if J.K. Rowling is listening to this podcast, there is no age for Harry Potter, and it spans, and it's multi-generational. But I do think that there is something about growing up with them and then having to do that. Like, even though Bayana was, like, way younger than I was, like, having to do that wait time, I think is important because you have to, like, absorb that stuff because it gets really dark. And
that's a great comment. We talk a lot about that, about obviously living in a culture that could be said to be very instant gratification. I remember being outside the Harry Potter world, like, when the book was going to be released, there'd be, like, lines around the block at bookstores at midnight the day it was going to come out or something. And just that feeling that I got excited even though I hadn't read them yet, by just seeing this happen. And I love that you just said, like, you, for various reasons, to absorb the content and also the delicious anticipation of when the next book comes, that there is that waiting period, which technically now you could read all Harry Potter's, like, in a weekend, like, one right after the other without a break, but you were sort of forced to, which I think might be a good thing sometimes. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, totally. It makes you more excited for it, too. Like, I know.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I maybe, because my first wait was between Goblet of Fire and Order of the Phoenix. So when Order of the Phoenix came out, like, I remember I was going to work with my dad, and I made him stop at, like, a Barnes & Noble on the way to work so that I could grab my book. Yeah. And then like Deathly Hallows, I was I was out of town, so I was like harassing my mom to go pick up my book. So then when I came back home, I could like read it.
It's when Deathly Hallows came out, I was driving home from college, and my mom is a crazy person, and so she wanted, I went to school in Indiana, and she wanted to try to do Indiana to California in a day. And I was like, I'm driving by myself because this very important thing is happening that you don't understand. And she wouldn't let me. And so I had to like reserve the book in like 8 different states just because I wasn't sure where we would be. And we ended up at the Las Vegas airport at midnight. And then she was like, and there was still a line and there's still a release party. And she was like, what is going on? And I was like,
That's amazing.
You remember that story, and that's a great story, like the all around getting a hold of this book.
I actually
book.
Have a story about that too, because
I just love that Robin said, like, she's being very patient with her mother, who she's acknowledged is a crazy person. She's like, Mom, there's something happening. You just don't understand.
Something so similar happened to me because I was going on vacation with some people, and I was like, something is happening. You don't understand why this is a really big deal to me, but it really is, and I'm going to need to go get this book. And I had put it on reserve, but we had already left. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to stop into this Borders. I know there's no way they're going to have it, and they totally have it. And I was like, yes, oh my gosh, I actually get to read. And then I spent the whole trip reading the book and ignoring everyone else.
That sounds about right. I actually finished it, and I think the drive from Vegas to San Diego, where I lived, was like, I think it's 6 hours. And I told her, I was like, if you want to do this crazy thing, you know that by the time when I get my book, you're driving and I'm not helping, and that's that. And I think I finished it before we got back to San Diego.
Wow.
So awesome. I was one of those people that would like make coffee to finish the book, and then just like the rest of the day I'd be asleep. But from midnight until whenever I finished, it was like that was what I was doing.
Awesome. So Harry Potter has obviously been a very big part of your lives. And we kind of wanted, so I actually wrote down your mission statement from your site so that we could explain to people really what it was. And so it says, we showcase a variety of creativity, including but not limited to essays, fiction, art, and other forms of multimedia. And we strive to be a collaborative space committed to championing and highlighting the increased media representation of Black girls and women specifically, and of people in color in general. So I know that you guys write a lot of specific blog posts and stuff for your site, but I also really wanted to talk about your Hogwarts BSU project. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it's a project actually. So my dad is also a nerd, and so I got like my nerd side from him, even though he's not really like into Harry Potter in the same way. He's really into like Star Wars mostly. But we also just have a lot of random conversations about things, and so he was like, maybe you should write something about like the Black Hogwarts, Black students at Hogwarts. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I don't really have time to really do that, but I'd still love to have that be a thing, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we started Hogwarts BSU as just a way for Black Potterheads to kind of write themselves into the wizarding world. We don't get a lot of representation of Black students, or even just Black characters. There are 5 in the books and 4 of them are students. And so we were just like, even with, and then there's like Hermione, the casting for The Cursed Child. We were just kind of like, you know, here Black Potterheads, write like these stories that you want to see in Hogwarts. And so we have,
and then there's the lavender thing. Sorry, I just wanted to jump lavender in with like the lavender brown.
You might need to explain to Frank who that is.
Lavender brown?
He's only read the first book.
I've only read the first book. I'm like a complete dunce.
She's a student that plays a bit of a role later in the books, but she's nondescript in the books. But she was cast as Black in the first couple of movies, and then when she becomes a bigger character, they recast her as white.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. I haven't seen all the movies. I did not realize that. Oh my God.
So like I don't think she really speaks in the movies, like in the early ones. Like she's in the book a lot.
Side.
In the movie. So she's just like a side, like a background character. Right. But if you go and look at the casting and like, if you go, even if you just Google Lavender Brown, like you'll see these like Black girls until the moment where she becomes
a love interest.
Character. Oh my god.
Yeah.
She's like Ron's girlfriend for a while.
Yeah. Oh. So once she becomes a love interest, that's when she becomes white.
Oh my god.
In the movies.
In the movie, yes.
In the book, she's still not described.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Yeah. And so that was kind of the other thing too, right? Is that like Joe doesn't really, or like I'm saying that like I know her, but J.K. Rowling doesn't really she doesn't describe a lot of her characters racially, so they can be left up to interpretation. And like there are some problems with that, but it also opens space for you to kind of just imagine that certain characters are not white. And so we have certain posts where in Hogwarts VSU where it like talks about Hermione, and then we have I feel like a lot of the ones that we have are mostly people kind of making up their own characters and then placing them in the world, while others are characters who are already black, or Hermione who, because now everybody's like, she's black, y'all, we're not going back.
Yeah. But there is a big movement like in the fandom. I don't know if it was a big movement actually, but it was one of the things that drew me into the fandom, that Hermione was black. And I don't know if I read her as black until I got on Tumblr and things, but there are also like Asian Sirius Black, South Asian Harry, and like these kind of race bending of Harry Potter it's a whole thing now. And so it's funny because we were just talking about how now when I go back and read them again, I see a South Asian, like an Indian Harry Potter, and a Asian Sirius Black because of all of the fan art that
what did you see the first time you read them when you were young? Well, I guess you weren't like a little kid, but when you were younger.
Yeah. I think I just defaulted to white. I grew up in a predominantly white space and from Anaheim. So at the most, it was predominantly white. And then there was a larger Latinx population. So I just think that because of all of the media I consume, which is mostly Disney, I could talk about the new Mickey Mouse Club until I'm blue in the face. I defaulted everything to white unless it was explicit, like the way that Lee Jordan's character is explicit, or Dean Thomas's character is explicitly black. But there were things about like Hermione that really spoke to me that still do. And then to get more involved in the fandom, to see that wasn't just me. There's a lot of people who caught those same clues. And like Bayana said, I don't know if J.K. Rowling, I doubt that she did it on purpose, but the way that she wrote that character lends herself to be read as black.
I was going to say, you mentioned before, J.K. Rowling did never said explicitly that she left some details unclear because she wanted to be unclear, or she hasn't said that. It's just the way she wrote it.
Well, it's not really clear. Like, I think, I guess with the casting of Noma Dumas-Wainey as Hermione in the play, she did say a thing, like tweet out like, oh yeah, I never said that Hermione was white, so like she could be black, so I'm cool with it. Which I think is not the same as being like deliberately not racing characters. I think that she probably fell into the same trap that we fell into as readers, is that like, I don't have to describe their race because they're white, and so therefore like, it's that kind of idea that like they're colorblind or whatever, when really it makes it, it's just like, oh, it just means we default to whiteness, which is a problem. You know what I mean? Like, like white isn't the absence of race. And so I feel like that's kind of the trap that she fell into. And then us as like being like kids who, like, I know I grew up in a family that was like extremely Afrocentric and like, were really about making sure that I was proud of being black and like who I was. But at the same time, like I was still consuming media outside of my family. And so when I read the books, I also still defaulted. Like in my head, I was like, yeah, I'm sure they're white. You know what I mean?
Especially because it's set in Britain. And so you're like, everyone in Britain's white, right? And so you actually go to Britain and you're like, no, not at all.
There's a whole book written in the 50s by Charles Williford. He's like a hard-boiled film, like noir crime writer that hinges on just that. Like you don't find till the end of the book, the last line, that the protagonist you've been following is black. You One automatically assumes he's white, and it's completely what you just said. And I can't remember the title. It's Charles Williford, Williford. It's so cool. I was like blown away when I read it like at 20, and I was like, wow, the assumptions I made that the author who's black assumed one we would make. And as I get older, though, I realize the less description, the more I appreciate the less description, because I feel positively that it's not telling me who the characters are per se. If it's not necessary, it could be any race I choose to imagine.
I would quibble with that, though, because I think that there is something to being explicit, because especially when it comes to like what she's been doing recently, which is kind of going back and retconning things and saying like, oh yeah, Dumbledore is gay.
Yeah.
Like, how powerful would that have been for a young, like, gay person growing up know that, like, a explicitly gay character could rise in the ranks and become the headmaster of Hogwarts and also be, like, one of the most celebrated and talented, like, wizards of all time. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, the colorblind, you get into this trap where you're saying colorblind means that we're not being racist, but in actuality, like, I want you to see my race. I want you to know, like, how race plays into my everyday. It's like, I can't erase my race as much as I can erase being a woman, and that colors my everyday experiences. So to be more explicit I think what it would do is allow for readers to have more empathy and to see, like, I don't know if you guys saw Moonlight. I'm going way out of tangent. This is what we do on Wizard Team, by the way. But one of the actors, when speaking about Moonlight, said that in being so specific, they're able to tell a very universal story. And I think that that's what we need to get to.
Yeah.
Where you start to get really specific about the way that, like, the fact that Hermione, there's a myriad of problems with how she reacts to the house elves. But the fact that she would do that, if you look at that through the lens of a black student coming into a new world and seeing that there's a slavery system, and it may not be, we also fall into the trap of being American and thinking like, oh, so it must be chattel slavery. And it may not be that kind of slavery system, but it's still, they're slaves. So how does her background and her lived experience then change the way that she reacts to that, as opposed to the way that Ron, who grew up white, pure blood, and in the world, reacts to it.
Right. Who grew up in the world where that was totally normalized.
Right. Mm-hmm. And even if you grew up in the world where that was totally normalized, but you're not normalized, you see it differently.
Right.
You know?
Right. And her growing up both without magic and in a place where it wasn't being normalized would make a lot of sense.
Right.
I'm looking at Frank because I'm not sure if he knows what a house elf is.
I don't.
Frank, you really got to get on these books. I don't know if anyone told you, but they're pretty important.
I can tell you that Frank's experience with these books is that he and I did an episode where we challenged each other to read a book. And the only reason that he ever read Harry Potter is because I forced him to.
I listened to that episode and I was like, Frank, what are you doing? But I was also like really intrigued with the book that you chose for her.
Oh yeah.
But still, you gotta get on these books.
The Hollywood one. I know.
I'm curious how you got your aunt to read all of them. Did she decide she wanted to read all of them, or did you sort of keep encouraging her?
Well, she's a teacher.
Frank, stop listening.
She teaches older students though.
Okay.
And I think that my enthusiasm, had I grown up closer to Bayana's family, I don't think I would have grown up so weird. I would have been more accepted because they're a much more like artistic family. Whereas like my dad and like my immediate family, they're very much into sports and you know, we were like a sport family. And like to this day, like Christmas to me means sitting down and watching 6 hours of basketball. And at some point my mom will like lose it and start yelling at us because all we do is watch basketball. It's like part of the tradition.
That is so interesting because I feel like sports nerds and book nerds are not. Yeah.
I've grown into my nerd identity, I'm like, you guys are nerds too. Like, let's not pretend. Like my dad has like the 1982 Lakers championship game, like, on tape. Like, that is a nerdy thing to do. Like, that is just, and he watches it. Like, he has no problem watching, like, NBA Classic, and I'll come home and I'm like, ooh, a game. And then I'm like, this happened before I was born. That is nerdy.
I wanted to ask this before, like, this concept of nerddom. Like, for my generation, like, nerd was not a compliment. It was not a nice word.
It's been reclaimed.
It was not a nice word. Yeah. So how do you see, is there a hierarchy? Is there a range of nerddom? Is there, like...
There's definitely a range. Like, I grew up, again, Southern California, but we moved to San Diego when I was in high school, and so I started going to Comic-Con, and I saw, like, my first LARPers, which is live action roleplay, and I was like, oh, they're nerds, right? Like, that is a thing. And then I have a friend who collects toys, like, and I went to a party for toy collectors, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm a cool nerd. You guys are a whole nother thing, right? And it's still kind of weird to, like, get my brain out of growing up and being like, oh, nerds are not cool. But there's this John Green quote, which is like, a nerd is just someone who is, like, unashamed and enthusiastically loves something. So being called a nerd is not an insult. It's just saying, you really love this thing. And it's like, yeah, I really love this thing, you know? So.
Right. I think it's definitely generational too. Like, I was talking to my grandfather, and, like, he, like, vaguely, my grandparents, like, vaguely know, like, about what I do, mostly just, you know, they're, like, older, so they're, my grandmother's like, I still don't understand what a podcast is.
Yeah. I have that too.
That's fine. But he was like, he told me once, he was like, I don't see you as a nerd. And I was like, really? Because that's pretty large part of my identity, but that's cool. But it's also just, like, what his understanding of a nerd is versus, right, like, my understanding of it is.
Right.
So I like that definition of that, like, it's something you really love, like, almost obsessively. But do you have any other adjectives that that describe nerd as you see it? Just curious.
I mean, I think that, like, there's this weird, like, linguistic thing about, like, what's a nerd versus what's a geek versus what's a, you know, a dweeb. The comedian Chris Hardwick says that dweebs, like, they are the ones, they're like the mouth breathers, like, they just cooked a little too long, like, they're a little weird, like, socially. And then there's, like, a saying that, like, you know, geeks are more into STEM and nerds are more into, like, pop culture.
Oh.
I don't really buy that. I think it's, like, whatever you feel comfortable. Like, I hate the term blurred. Like, do not call me that. It sounds like something that you throw up. I don't like it. It's
blurred?
It's not, like,
oh, like a blurred mashup black of black nerd? Nerd?
Yeah. So
that's,
it's like
terrible.
A mashup,
but that, because that just sounds like you're,
like,
blurry.
Kind of cough up. I don't like it.
Right.
So.
No.
But a lot of people identify as blurreds, and so, like, that's the word that they choose. I kind of, like, there's the term knock, which is nerd of color, and I like that. Mm-hmm. Like, you can call me that. Huh. But I think that it's really, I think that everyone is a nerd in something, and then you just need to figure out what that thing is that you're a nerd about.
Right.
Totally agree. So.
But, like, this idea of, like, nerd, if I'm getting this right, is, like, nerd in its essence, at least right this minute, is white. So, like, saying nerd of color, you have to qualify nerd with that, or black girl nerd. Is that, am I seeing that right? Like, you have to qualify it because the identification of nerd is white?
Well, I think that's true with, like, everything, right? So there's, like, feminism, yeah, but then you have to qualify sometimes. Like, a lot of black women do not identify with feminism because that's, like, white feminism, TM trademarked, like,
right,
the stuff that you see. And so then you hear, like, you know, humanist or womanist or black feminist. I think that that's just the nature of the world that we're in, where mm-hmm. people like to put people in boxes. But also there is a problem in general, just in terms of, like, representation. Mm-hmm. And so to say that a marginalized person consumes media in the same way that a white person does is just intellectually false. And so there are, and because we are so obsessed with classifying people and putting people, like, putting proper labels on things, that's how that comes up, I think. I don't know, Bianna. I'm talking
right.
A lot.
I mean, I think it's a lot of what you said, Robin, because it's about representation, but then it's also about, like, people not fully understanding their audiences. And like you said, like, white nerds and black nerds have different, they're coming from different, like, backgrounds, and so have different things that they are, like, thinking about. And then also, you know, like, you watch something like Game of Thrones, which I love, and it's like, you don't really, I don't see myself in that story. I love it for other reasons, but then, you know, you want to see something like...
Well, you can say, like, Daniel Jose Older's, like, Battle Hill Bolero, like, the Bone Street Rumba series, where it's, like, set in Brooklyn, and there are plenty of people of color.
And it's, like, talking about issues that very specifically apply to people of color,
right,
and not in a way that, like... I don't know, I feel like sometimes science fiction and fantasy run into the problem where, like, they try to talk about the issues of today, but erase the people who are actually, like, dealing with those issues. Kind of putting that, that qualifier, like, oh, I'm a black nerd, or I'm a black feminist. Like, those kind of things help with more with visibility and being like, hey, I'm also here, and, like, my experience matters, and, like, you should also be catering to, like, to me and, like, my dollar, because really that's what it comes down to when we talk about pop culture and, you know, like watching television and, all, and reading books and all that stuff. But it's just, I really think it's a visibility thing.
Yeah. And that really ties back into what you were saying also. And I hate to criticize the master here, but I really think that J.K. Rowling did people a disservice by
To criticize the master.
Yeah. it's like hearsay, but it's okay. I really think she did people a disservice by not being more explicit, because these are children's books, right? And children can be very visual and very literal. And I think that she should have said, Dumbledore is gay, Hermione is black. Like, and actually, when I first saw the movies, which I have not been a huge fan of, honestly, it's definitely not the way I really love the books. I always thought that Hermione was big, that she was a larger woman. I am a larger woman, and I guess I was just reading that onto her, but I loved that Hermione was described as having bushy hair and buck teeth and not being pretty. And that was actually kind of important to me, even though I was in my late teens, early 20s when I first read this book. And I was like, that's so awesome. I wish that that had been around when I was a kid. And then when the movies came out and it's Emma Watson, I was like, what? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So I really...
defend her a little bit, but not too much, with just the fact that, like, it was still the 90s, late night, you know what I mean? Like, so she did a lot, I think. But then
Fine.
People let her be, like, Jo Rowling. Right? She couldn't even be, she had to be, like, sexually ambiguous for them to, like, publish the book. So I do agree with you. And I think, especially now with, like, the new stuff coming up, like, I've written about how she owes her fans, and I think that it's also important to say that you can love her and she can be the master, but we hold her to a higher standard, and that's fine, right? Yeah. Like, and she should, and you should hold everyone that you're giving your money to and that you are invested in to a high standard. Like, I hold Bayana to a high standard, so like, it doesn't mean that I don't love her, and it doesn't mean that I'm not going to, like, support her, but that also doesn't mean that I'm gonna be quiet when something that she does misses the mark, because I want to make sure that the next thing that she does doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
So
that's a good way to think
just
that.
I don't like devil's advocates. I hate playing devil, but I do think that, like, sometimes we forget, especially now as, like, there's all this new stuff coming and she's expanding the world so much, that when it started, it was 97 or so. So having a gay, like, character in charge of children probably wouldn't have flown for her publishers.
Right, for sure. I like how you actually, within your adoration of these things, that you also embed economics in it. Like, both of you have referred at different times to, like, my dollar or the wanting my dollar. And I really think that's important to always remember, that that's sort of always a part of the equation. And
I mean, like, we always kind of talk about how, like, we have all this stuff to say about J.K. Rowling and, like, ways that she can do better. But at the same time, we're like, she's still going to get my money, though.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Right. All the stuff with, like, Magic in North America. And it was, like, really, like, we literally, like, we flew to London to see The Cursed Child.
Oh. I want my money back. I want all my money back.
What? I listened to that podcast.
Oh, your podcast about that was so good.
Tour. She can keep the money for the studio tour. That was worth it. But for anything that I spent on the play, I want it back.
Yeah. Listeners, if you're only going to listen to one episode of Robin and Bayana's podcast, that's the episode. It's so good.
Yeah.
I really want to know what is going to happen to your amazing podcast once you get finished with all the books. Huh. Do you have a plan?
We've been kind of thinking about it. It's not, we're not totally sure yet, but we also do bonus episodes. where we like kind of talk about stuff outside of like without the confines of like the chapter that we're reading. Mm-hmm. So we've been thinking a lot about doing more like, I guess at that point they'd just be regular episodes, but more bonus episodes after we, I don't know. I mean, we also, there's like more Fantastic Beasts stuff that's going to be coming out. Like we don't have like a real plan yet. Cause we mm-hmm. have like at least 2 years.
But actually, you know what? I just realized we didn't explain that, did we? Your podcast goes episode by episode, chapter by chapter through the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Each episode is a deep dive chapter.
And so we've been reading, we're on Goblet of Fire now. We've been reading these, it's been maybe like a year and a half now, almost.
Yeah.
That we've been like rereading the books.
That's so awesome. And yeah, I just love it. I find it so much fun.
We also like definitely like by Anna said, she's got a younger sister now who will, I think we said she'll be 7 when we finish.
Uh-huh.
So we're definitely going to want to do something and have her. I mean, she's already like a unofficial co-host, but we're going to want to like do a little bit with her. Also because she's just amazingly hilarious.
As an outsider to the Potter world, it seems like you could talk forever about the Potter world. Like finish the chapter by chapter.
About it between ourselves for years before we had the podcast. Yeah. So we're not really that. I don't think we're that worried about. Yeah. You know what? It's just more of a matter of like how much do we want to say, and then we also have other fandoms that we want to explore. So we could potentially do Wizard Team forever. that's the thing that we could do.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay, do you want to finish up by giving us your book and non-book recommendations?
Yes, I'm so excited about this. I've been probably annoying Bayana about how excited I am about this. I'm going to start with my book recommendation for Wizards in Space. It's a literary magazine. I'm like, also, I feel kind of bad because like everything that I'm going to recommend is like stuff that my friends are doing, but they're amazingly talented people. Olivia Dolphin works with Leaky Con and Mischief Management, and that's how I met her. I met her at a Harry Potter convention, but mm-hmm. she does this literary magazine, and it's not about it's all original works. A lot of people come from the fandom though, and so it's poetry, short stories, it's a lot of things. And she's getting ready to, the second volume might already be available. But I picked up Wizards in Space at the Granger Leadership Academy this year, and it is amazing. So I would definitely recommend that as my book recommendation, and then also like tell people to go and like give to the Kickstarter and stuff so that we can continue having this outlet. And she takes submissions, so if you're a writer or something, it'd be a great place to get your feet wet.
How often does it come out? Is it like a journal?
I'm not exactly sure. I think like she might do one every 6 months. So there's volumes. She's just starting with volume 2 now. But I don't know if it comes out on a cadence yet.
Okay.
But it's something that she just started, and it is amazing. And she really reached out to people that are heavily involved in the Harry Potter fandom, but like it's not about Harry Potter. So it's just a way to get people who kind of, the one thing about the fandom too is like you'll see these people that uphold the same kind of beliefs that you have, and there's a really strong sense of family within people that are active in the fandom. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to hear original works from these people that are into this thing.
And non-book?
Okay, so non-book recommendation. Again, I feel like I'm like shouting out all of my friends, but I have two actually, because I feel bad about shouting out my friends, but the Harry Potter Alliance, I'm a volunteer. They do amazing work. They strive to like bring activism into your fandom. So even if you're not a Harry Potter fan, they have campaigns around like the Hunger Games or Avatar, The Last Airbender. I would definitely suggest checking them out. They're doing an apparating library and an Accio library, like book drive right now. So that is something that is super cool. And they're like, they love libraries. They work with libraries a lot. So I figured it's a good tie-in for this podcast. And then I would also suggest The Expanse, which is on Sci-Fi. It's a TV show. It's It's amazing. And it's also a book series, too.
So. Oh, wow. Awesome.
It's based off a book. So, yeah. Those are mine.
That is fantastic.
Okay, cool. So my book recommendation is The Fifth Season by N.K. Jemisin.
Oh, I love that book.
It's so good. It just won a Hugo Award, I believe, like last year.
Yeah.
And the first two books, it's going to be a trilogy.
I'm back.
It's the first book I've read in a really long time, like that I read like Harry Potter, where I just kind of like sat down and finished it in like 2 days. Because I haven't really been a good reader lately, and that was a book I picked up and just like finished really quickly. The writing is so amazing. It's also like the narrative style is really interesting.
Yeah.
In that, like, I spent the first maybe 3/4 of the book reading and like understanding what was going on, but also feeling like I was missing something. And just trying to figure, and it was like, that was the other thing. It was like trying to figure out what I was missing because of the way that the narrative style is. And then once that reveal was made, it blew my entire mind. Yeah, it's really, really good. And then my non-book recommendation is actually also another like friend shout out. But Hermione Granger and the Quarter Life Crisis is our friend Eliana, she started. It's like a fan film about Hermione Granger between I think she's maybe like 24, so it's like after they graduate Hogwarts and then before like the 19 years later, and it's just kind of like about her finding herself basically. And the first episode is already out on YouTube, and then the next couple episodes come out next week, I think.
Yeah, they're gonna drop on the 19th.
Oh my god, that sounds amazing.
It's really good.
It's so good. What a good title too.
Yeah. It's awesome.
She said she wanted to kind of go with the Harry Potter and the it's a great title.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
That is so great. Thank you guys so much. Yes, those are both really good ones. Thank you. I love to recommend that N.K. Jemisin book to people who are like, I don't really know if I like science fiction, but I think I do, and maybe I want to try something. It's a really good crossover book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Okay.
Thanks. I learned a lot, not so much about Harry Potter, but just about fandom and about politics. Listen, of
if
fandom.
If you want to talk to me, let's just schedule a call so we can talk about Harry Potter and why you need to get it.
I've heard your experiences, you. Robin. I'm afraid. You'll be coming at me.
Now that I'm involved, you better just start reading the books because
you're tenacious.
I'm coming for you.
Oh my god. Thank you. See, I haven't been tenacious enough, and I think with your help I will be able to convince Frank. Schedule a weekly call where you can just berate him until he does it.
Pottervention.
Yep. Okay. A Pottervention.
Ayana's mom likes to say that we're nerd bullies, so
Oh, I agree. Okay.
Perfect. Oh my gosh, you guys, thank you so much. You're amazing. This was so great. You've kicked off our
working at a library. Oh, you guys are superheroes.
And actually, thank you for shouting out all your friends involved in this stuff. That's exactly what you should do. Like you said, visibility. It's like fantastic. I'm actually really thrilled to hear what you had to say.
Totally.
I want to tune into the Hermione one. I sort of like that.
I know. I'm totally going to watch
that. Because I know there is that 19 years later thing a little bit. But I like how someone took that mid-range and told the story. Anyway, sounds cool.
Yeah. That's controversial. Some people like to pretend that doesn't exist.
Mm.
Which is a big part of this show, actually, is because a lot of people like to pretend it doesn't. We have issues with the epilogue. So she does a little bit of work in there.
That's awesome. I too have issues with that below. Okay, we totally have to go. The producer is literally looking at his watch right now. Okay, so thanks everybody for listening. Thanks again for you guys for coming. Please go and review us in iTunes. That helps other people find our show and makes us happy. And check out the show page for lots of links to all kinds of stuff we talked about today. You can go to nypl.org/podcast to see a full rundown of our episodes, and we will see you next week.